This is Mike Graham. This is Talk Sport. It's coming up to 5:29 very shortly. Coming up next, we'll hear from Keith Farnish, who's an eco-campaigner. Keith, thank you very much for joining us on Talk Sport. Are you pleased that the church appears to have come out on your side and decided to tell us all to save some energy and save the planet for Lent?
It's nice to see them doing something. I mean, I've had a look at it online, and there's some really useful stuff on there. It's not fantastic. The ideas, most of them are fairly trivial, but it's certainly a good idea, and it's happening 40 days, which is more than something like Earth Day, which is just one day when people go off and do something and then they carry on their lives.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, 40 days and 40 nights, I suppose, for the purists of those people who support the whole Lent thing. But some people have criticised them on the basis that because the church is losing so many kind of members over time, they've actually adopted saving the planet as their new religion.
Well, I mean, it's easy to be cynical about it. I mean, fundamentally, the church wants to connect with people, and that's absolutely right. I think they're doing it for less cynical reasons than businesses or governments, though. There's a lot of genuine truth behind it. But
this is one of the things that's quite perplexing, isn't it? Because when we hear about some of the trivial things that we do, like, for example, there's a government campaign to put everything off that's on standby,
that's
instead
right,
of leaving it on standby, and yet we hear from other experts who say that if you did that for an entire year, you'd just about get enough water to heat one bath.
Well, that's right, and it's absolutely true. I mean, most TVs consume hardly anything on standby, and it's the same for things like digiboxes and videos and whatever. Yeah. I mean, that to me, that's a complete smokescreen for really important stuff. I mean, even the government saying turn your thermostat down by 1 degree. Well, yeah, that's going to have some effect, but if you've already got your thermostat down to sort of 23 or something like that, which to us is like a sauna.
Mm.
I mean, we have ours set to 15, and
blimey.
That's
like not having it on at all, isn't it?
I'm wearing a T-shirt now.
Are you?
Yeah, and I mean, it's just something you get used to, really. I think it's just because we're all so used to doing certain things, and I think that's symptomatic of the whole of society, really. You get used to living in a certain way, and to change that is a wrench, whatever you do.
So would you say that you live in a way that's very different from the way most people live, then?
I think so. It's not fundamentally different. I live in a house, and I live in a town. I haven't quite gone on the sort of living off the land or anything like that, but it's certainly
not easy in Essex, I would imagine.
Sorry?
Not easy in Essex, living off the land, I would imagine.
Very, very difficult. I don't think I could afford that much land.
Right.
But certainly there's the moving towards that. I mean, my diet's very different to a lot of people. Most of our heating's from a wood burner. We virtually drive, well, do hardly any driving at all. We're getting rid of the car this year. We buy virtually nothing new. So, these are all pretty big things compared to how the average person lives.
Mm. Although I suspect with the way things are going economically, more and more people might find themselves being less wasteful just because they haven't got as much money to spend.
It is a definite good side effect. And it's funny, actually, we come back to this the church calling it a carbon fast, and Ed Miliband is one of the supporters, and that's quite a big disappointment, because Ed Miliband, who's the government's sort of climate change minister, is on record as saying that we can't really touch climate change if we're going to affect economic growth. And to me, they're two completely different things. Well, in that economic growth is, and it's purely to do with finance, whereas climate change is to do with everything we do. If you don't touch economic growth, unfortunately for the people who are really interested in making money, then you're not going to touch climate change, because they are really tied up. Economic growth, as the amount of money swirling around the system goes up, the amount of carbon being released goes up, and that's very easily traced. A strong financial economy produces an awful lot of greenhouse gases. There is no doubt about it. And if Ed Miliband wants to go on about keeping strong economic growth, then he's going to have to forget about dealing with climate change properly.
But isn't that, to some extent, what the government's doing at the moment? Because the economic crisis is so huge that their eye has somewhat gone off the ball on...
Oh, definitely.
On climate change. And also, I think for those of us who are, shall we say, dubious about the measures that are being taken, I mean, an awful lot of what the government has done has seemed to look like just a tax-raising issue rather than anything else.
Well, it's done nothing. Mm. I mean, over the last 10 years, the amount of... Well, our overall carbon emissions have actually gone up over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They only went down in the late 1980s because we turned from coal-fired power stations to gas.
Mm.
And then the government jumped into Kyoto and said, great, we can do that because we won't look too bad later on because we've managed to get our emissions down.
Yeah.
And now they're creeping up again and the government go, ooh, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust any governments, to be honest. I wouldn't trust any businesses to get us out of this problem.
But then if we can't trust the governments to get us out of the problem, then who's going
to
fix it?
It's down to us. It's down to us to reject a system that tells us in order to live a life that's decent, we have to consume stuff. And I really, if you're going to be really pragmatic about it, you have to understand that every bit of consumption we do is destroying the environment in some way.
Mm. But even if we all started buying second-hand goods and driving less, or maybe not even driving at all, that would be a drop in the ocean, would it not? Rather like the argument we just had about the TVs on standby, with say, you know, China opening up 10 new coal-fired power stations.
Well, the main reason that China is building so many coal-fired power stations is because we buy stuff from China. And most of the electricity that China uses, it uses to manufacture goods that people in the industrial West consume.
Mm.
So that's a bit of a red herring, really, but it's used by Western governments to say, point the finger at China and say how bad it is. And the same with India. India produces a load of our goods. But they're following the same dream as us, really. The same dream that we all followed in the 50s and 60s to say,
give us
a fantastic life.
Yeah, they may want to... they may do at the moment export most of what they produce to us, but in the long term, they presumably would like to have their own domestic market for a
while. Yeah, all the big companies are selling that dream to them. Mm. General Motors and Coca-Cola and McDonald's and all the Western companies have gone over there and said, this is the way you're going to live because it's the only way you can live.
Yeah.
And it's clearly nonsense because people have been living for tens, hundreds of thousands of years in thousands of different ways,
mm.
not just this
civilization. Yeah, but it's going to be difficult, isn't it, to talk people into going back in time and sort of living, like you suggested, off the land perhaps not using very much heating, not using, you know, any kind of method of reasonably good propulsion and having to wait around for buses and stuff like that. I mean, it's a bit of a hard task to produce with, isn't it?
It's a hell of a sell, and the majority of people aren't going to be sold it because the system is still selling them this dream.
Yeah.
With 6.7 billion people on this planet, the idea of supporting that many people off the land requires some kind of change that we've never seen before in humanity.
Not all just buying the dream, are we? I mean, some of us do things in a particular way because
some
we rather
us,
enjoy
yeah.
doing them. You know, some of us eat foods that are flown in from other countries because we rather like the taste of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but imagine if you'd never tasted chocolate before. I mean, you wouldn't miss it. And imagine if you've never watched the TV before, you wouldn't miss it.
Mm.
So these are things that we've...
I hardly watch it now, actually, and I don't miss it.
Well, I mean, I think, to be honest, that it's very easy to forget about these things if you give yourself a little bit of isolation, or rather connect with something else. To just go out for a nice long walk, you'll come back and hear the cacophony of civilization again, and you go, blimey, that is actually something that's not that nice.
Mm.
So it really is a case of understanding that humans aren't naturally civilized people. We're part of nature, and that connection is really the first step to getting us back to how we have to be.
So ideally, how would you have us all live in this country then, in a sort of nutshell?
Well, I would say the first way we've got to live is we've got to reconnect. We've just got to reject all this stuff we're being sold, and the whole dream idea.
Consumerism.
I'm not going to make big plans. I mean, I'm not the guru who's going to save us all, and I don't believe anyone should be.
Mm.
I think we've all got to find our own way in some way and build communities such that we can survive in smaller numbers, not these massive cities that suck all their energy from outside and suck all the...
Yeah, but that's never going to happen, though, is it?
It's going to happen anyway, because my belief is that there are going to be fundamental collapses in the system.
Mm.
And the economic this credit crunch is, it's an indicator of things that are to come. I'm certain.
You think it's a harbinger of us all going back to some time,
yes,
decades ago. Yes. What about this? Now, you've got a new book out, haven't you, called Time's Up. We'll find out where we can get hold of that in a second. What about some of those people who might not necessarily disagree that the Earth is heating up and that the climate is changing, but that they don't necessarily believe that the human race has actually got anything to do with it, and it's simply a cycle of the evolution of the Earth?
Well, there's not many of those people. They shout very loudly. I try just to avoid them, because if you ignore people like that, they'll tend to go away. It seems like a funny way of dealing with it.
Well, I'm one of them, actually, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
Right, well, in your case, I have thought recently, it is a waste of time, to a certain extent, trying to convince someone who will not be convinced. But there are three main reasons that people deny.
Well, especially when there are so many other people out there who are so easily convinced, I suppose.
Yeah, and eventually, you're going to be convinced by your friends. You're going to be convinced by people you trust. You're not going to be convinced by a stranger who's speaking to you on the phone.
I would certainly be convinced by evidence if I saw any, but I'm slightly suspicious of, as you said earlier, any government who suddenly starts telling me that I have to do this now, and now that this thing that I used to do, I'm now going to get taxed more on because they'd rather I didn't do it, and as a result of all of this, the planet's going to be saved. I just don't believe them.
Well, I agree with you. I wouldn't believe governments, and that what they're saying is not the way the planet's going to be saved. Speak to a gardener, or speak to someone who watches the way that birds migrate, or speak to a fisherman. These are all people who've got direct contact with what's actually happening on the ground.
Sure.
Or in the
air. Yeah, I mean, I've got absolutely no.
And they can
no
see
quarrel.
These things happening.
No quarrel about things happening. I've got no. I'm not one of those people that says it's not happening.
I
believe that it's
happening,
but what I'm not sure about is what's causing it.
Well, it's the speed it's happening that's so difficult to explain in any other way. We've never seen anything happen historically this fast and so dramatically, not through any ice ages, not through any solar cycles or anything like that. This is unprecedented. And the science out there really is, it totally outnumbers anyone who denies that carbon in the atmosphere does cause this. I mean, that's a fundamental physical fact. If you put more carbon in the atmosphere, it's going to cause a shell of atmosphere to heat up.
Why doesn't anyone talk about the ozone layer anymore?
Because the ozone layer is not directly related to climate change.
But that used to be the thing we talked about, didn't it?
It did.
There used to be a hole in the ozone layer. What happened to that?
Well, there is still a hole in the ozone layer. It was a thinning in the ozone layer over the poles, especially over the South Pole. That was dealt with under the Montreal Protocol in 1986, and it was actually an example of all governments getting together and going, right, we've got to deal with this. Why they did it then and they're not doing it now, I don't know. I would guess big business has something to do with it, and big business said, we're actually not that bothered about producing CFCs anymore, so they could do something about it. And the hole is shrinking now, and it is still affecting marine life to a certain extent. But it's not related to climate change. So people do commonly mix the two up, but they're not the same.
Okay. Now tell us a little bit about this book, Time's Up. What's that all about?
Well, I call it a survival guide, really. It basically guides you through the kind of things that are happening. It tells you about humanity and how and why, basically why we're not doing anything about it. And it deals with civilization, effectively. It deals with all the things that governments and businesses do to stop you trying to know about this, that stop you trying to change. And it gives you essentially the keys to creating that change, to actually doing it yourself and trying to free yourself from all of this rubbish that's going on.
And where can people get the book?
Currently you can buy the book online or from Waterstones are currently stocking it. And if you go to my website...
Yes, please, give us that.
...timesupbook.com.
Okay.
That will tell you a bit about the book, and it will also give you some links to where you can buy it. But you can also read it for free. Something I've done is, before I had the book published, there was another version called A Matter of Scale. So there's a few links on the website that will take you to the online book. If you don't want to buy it, you can read it.
Well, that would save a lot of energy, wouldn't it?
Certainly.
Now, the other thing I went to ask you just before I let you go, Keith, is presumably you came to this campaign for some reason. I mean, I was reading that you used to be an IT worker, you used to work in IT. When did you suddenly become an eco-campaigner?
I think it's just something that's developed gradually. I've realised that I can't just leave things as they are. I've got a certain skill. I can write. I can campaign. I'm a huge cynic. I'm a cynic like you are, but in a different way. And I just feel I've got to do something about this. And just these little connections I've made with the real world have made me realise that I just don't want to lose this.
Yeah.
It's just so such a fundamental part of being a human, and you can't let that go. I've got to try and do something about it.
Okay. And have you got kids?
I've got two children, yeah.
How old are they?
They're 9 and 11.
Okay. So what do they think of your campaigning?
Oh, they're huge supporters of it. In fact, if I let them do whatever they wanted to do, they'd be far more radical than I would. Some of the things that they say...
They haven't got to that age yet where they go, Dad, can we not watch the telly?
They've got to the age where they'd like to get rid of all cars and they'd like to do it physically, but I think they just decide that they've made up their own minds, and I've just let... I've sort of told them the truth about things, and if they want to lead their lives in a different way, they can. I think everyone's got to have free will.
Indeed.
We've just got to have the information to do that, to use that free will.
Okay, Keith. Thank you very much indeed.